Morning Focus, in association with Shannon Airport. Fly Shannon and pack more into your city break. Depart hassle-free to Manchester, Edinburgh, London and more. Connecting you to the world. Explore more today on shannonairport.ie.
It's Morning Focus here with you until 12 noon. Before we go any further, I want to let you know that there is a charity walk taking place in Tuna this coming Sunday, starting and finishing at Tuna Hall. This is in support of the Seeking Vision Clare Sunset Foundation Group. The entry fee is €10. There's walks to suit all levels of fitness, and registration at Tuna Hall gets underway at 11:30. Happy to give that a mention this morning. If there's something else you'd like us to talk about, 086 1800 964, the number to send us a text. We're going to review the week now in the company of our Friday panel. Before that, let's look back on some of the main news stories of the past 7 days.
The gap has widened in real terms between the better off and poor people. And there's no doubting, if you were to go out and check with ordinary people who are listening to this, that they would recognise that there's a problem, a serious problem with housing. We have a two-tier healthcare system.
I live here. I know on the ground how exciting it is to be here at the moment and the changes that we're going through and the opportunities that are here for career progression. And I suppose what we're trying to do at the airport was really communicate that to a new audience.
There's a small group of people who are responsible for very many of the burglaries, who are being arrested on suspicion of these burglaries, and that's something that needs to be recognised by policymakers such as me when it comes to introducing legislation.
I want all the girls watching here and now to know that a new day is on the horizon.
Oprah would be a lot of fun. I know her very well. You know, I did one of her last shows. She had Donald Trump, this is before politics, her last week. And she had Donald Trump, and my family was very nice. No, I like Oprah. I don't think she's going
to
run.
People forget that they had to learn to drive, and they have no patience whatsoever with you trying to concentrate, trying to get people to do the right thing in heavy traffic. They just want you off the road, out of the way. I'm in a hurry. I've got a big car.
Dan Barrett there from the Ennis School of Motoring, talking about rude drivers. We mentioned that during the week. You heard from Oprah Winfrey, who may run for president in 2020, and from Donald Trump, who reckons he'll beat her if she does. Jim O'Callaghan of Fianna Fáil reacting to figures on burglaries. They've fallen in the latter part of last year, according to Gardaí. And at the top, Father Sean Healy of Social Justice Ireland, saying any economic growth isn't being distributed fairly. This after IBEC said we've made an exceptional recovery since the economic crisis. Well, you heard from Orla Borthwick too. She's part of the Action Plan for Jobs in the Midwest and their campaign to get immigrants to come back here and to work here as well. Our Friday panel join me in studio to discuss these stories and more. I'm joined by William Cahir of Cahir & Company Solicitors, President of Venice Chamber of Commerce, by Martin Waldron, who hails from Curragh Finn. He's also got the Craftworks shop on Parnell Street in Ennis, and Michael Vaughan, a hotelier in Lahinch, former president of the Irish Hotels Federation. Good morning to you all, and thanks very much for joining us this morning. I think it's a question we've often asked, but I still think it's an important one, William, in terms of the economic recovery, with IBEX saying that things are flying. A lot of people hear that and go, well, no, they're not for me. So it's hard to square one with the other, I would suggest.
It is, yeah, and absolutely. Look, there's no question but that there is an economic recovery. There's no question but that there's far more economic activity going on. But the reality is that there is a lot of people that are being left behind. And I suppose it does need to be looked at from a governmental point of view. I mean, you can look at the economic recovery. You can look at the nominal increase in the minimum wage. But the problem being, that just adds to a layer of costs. So while people might end up with more at the end of the week, their cost factor has gone up as much, so they're not going to be any better off. So overall, I suppose we need to look at what are the costs within the actual economy and how best can we save on those costs. In particularly, like, rent would be a very hot topic for people out there and people who are in the rental market. There's been a marked increase in rents across the country.
But is that not just the market doing what the market does? Rents, prices go up because there is more demand.
Yeah, but there's also a shortage of supply. Mm. So there is a gap there that are we at a proper economic level with regards to rent, or do we need to supply more housing so that there's more affordable housing, so therefore people actually have more disposable income in their pockets and they actually get the feel-good factor that they should do from an economic bounce.
Okay. Michael Vaughan, tourism was flying last year, so is Lahinch buoyant?
No, I think anybody in tourism would have to say that the recovery has reached their doorstep. There's no doubt about that. I always judge it on my overdraft, and And usually I'd be heavy, I'd be into the overdraft by the time I close the door of the hotel. But this year I got as far as Christmas, so that's really good news for me. that I can actually have a bit of comfort and do things with the money I've made over the summer and put it back into the product.
Okay.
And you know, I think people are expecting a wage increases, and they're right to be expecting them because the market is recovering.
But is it a sectoral recovery? Is it a geographic recovery? Even still, in that Dublin might be the ship that rises, but in this case, it's not floating all boats.
Yeah, it is that. And do you know the other recovery that people aren't talking about is the effect of the downturn? That people's time is the new wealth. And people who are in business are finding they have less time for the quality things in their life.
Mm.
And employees are finding that. And I think the really big thing, our conference coming up now in the end of January, and one of the topics I'm going to be discussing there is the balance between our work and our life. And we've been focusing on the economic values, and we do even today. But, you know, they're saying now that you know, to some people, getting extra time off work will be worth more to them than having a big increase in their salary. Mm.
But is that not, I see William's nodding, we'll go back to him in a second, is that not down to personal choice? Obviously, if your boss is making that choice, then it's not your own personal one, but, you know, it's individual circumstances.
Yeah, but you see, I think if you look at the sector and you look at County Clare, the majority of businesses in Clare are small businesses employing one or two or three people. And the owners of those businesses are working as hard as anybody else inside in those businesses. And I'm thinking of the general population. Our mental health is under pressure. I've no doubt about that. I'm talking to so many people that are saying their health has been affected by the pressures of life and work in the last number of years. And they're something that a checkbook and a wage increase will not sort. And I think that should be as much a part of the economic recovery and dialogue as the wage.
Martin Mulgen, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, well, firstly, before I go on to the point, I want to commend Clare FM and their bravery in this age of political correctness and gender quotas.
Thanks,
to have an all-male, middle-aged panel here. It's good to know that we too have a voice. I'll go back to on topic again, right?
We had a cancellation of a lady, by the way.
No, it's okay, you're grand. In terms of tourism, in terms of balance, in terms of the economic recovery, I can say three things. First of all, we don't see the recovery down here. You're seeing up where there is the bigger population basis. Secondly, you're not seeing the recovery off the Wild Atlantic Way. The Wild Atlantic Way has gained quite a bit, but the tourism businesses that are actually inland from that haven't seen that same level of recovery. And the third point Michael was making about balance, I think balance is quite important in life. If you're in a rat race, it's a rat race, and there's very little left for yourself. It's important that you can actually live a life on less means, but be much happier. And that's one of the things that the last 10 years have brought to a lot of people, in that they were living in this rat race during the Celtic Tiger. Celtic Tiger fell apart. A lot of people suffered. A lot of people stood back and actually understood there's a different way of doing things. You can do things on a smaller base. Mm. You can do things on a base where it's better for you at the end of the day, and it's more sustainable.
But for all of those people who've been able to do that, there are at least as many more, and I would wager a lot more, who've gone the other way, who, either in their own businesses or working in businesses, have had to do more with less, who've had to work longer and work harder. And I think Michael is right and is bringing up a valid point when he says that is still continuing, and that'll probably be even slower to come about than an actual economic recovery.
Could I maybe interject there, because I had a girl who was working with me, and I was looking for her to come in and do particular days of the week. I thought it would suit her lifestyle, and she said, no, I can't do it, because, you know, my husband gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and he travels to a job in Cork because the job wasn't available in Clare, and he's commuting from West Clare to Cork five mornings of the week, and he's not getting back till 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And you could say that there is a recovery coming into that house, but what's the cost of it?
Mm.
That's my point. Yes.
And it's not an unusual situation, of course, as well. Well,
I live in a small village, Corrifin, and it's become a dormitory town now, because the vast majority of the people who moved into the new housing estates, young, married, two cars, two jobs, they leave Corrifin at 7:30 in the morning. It's like a corridor. You watch the traffic going through Corrifin first thing in the morning, heading off to Galway, heading off to Limerick, heading off to Ennis. They don't get back until 6:30 at night. They're paying a high mortgage. They've got creche. They've all these costs. They have no downtime. their only downtime is to buy a bottle of wine, go in, crash out at 10 o'clock at night and watching Netflix. Like, what's the quality of life there? Like, I would hate to go back 25 years ago and be starting out in life in Ireland again and facing all those high-cost environments. So, there's an economic recovery, but it isn't there for everybody. And life is tough for a lot of people, but I think the balance is key. If you don't have balance in your life, then you need to reconsider the rat race you're in.
And I think that's one of my concerns with some of the policies we see, William, from the likes of the IDA, I suppose, where they come along and talk about regions and, you know, we can go and fight as a region of whatever it is, 250,000 people or thereabouts, which makes sense until you see the amount of people that have to commute to, in the main, Limerick and Galway, to get work.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I know from the Chamber point of view, and we're looking at this from a policy and a strategic point of view, like, we have so much to offer from a quality of life point of view that we have to win on that argument first, and then the employers will arrive. Mm. We probably won't get the larger scale employers that are only looking at conurbations and large centres of population, but there's certainly a whole service industry and there's a whole other industry out there that Ennis can certainly win on, and we can win far better than maybe Limerick and Galway because of the cost base that we can offer. And then equally so from Ennis, then there is a spread out to the rest of the county, and there has to be, because Ennis needs the rest of the county to thrive. So therefore we need the likes of the villages of Curraghfinn, Ennis Diamond, Kilkee, Kilrush, Kildicerage. We need everywhere to be functioning for the entire county to function. That's really where the county has to come together. And the one thing, like, I worked in Dublin for many years in a big firm, and like when I came down to Ennis, the big thing was I could be finished work and I could be in Lahinch surfing by 6:30. You know, that's not an option if you're living in a big city. You know, so we have to get out and we have to sell the quality of life that you can have if you move to Clare. And that then afterwards, once we get the population, you can get everything else. But it is key. And certainly with regards to Ennis, we're looking at plans. How do we grow the population to 50,000 by 2040? Because that has to happen, because you have to get the population base to create the jobs.
But will you lose that? You won't lose the ability to get to Lahinch by 6:30, but will you lose some of the benefits of working and living in a smaller town?
Not necessarily if you do it properly and if you do it correctly.
It's a very big if.
No, it's not. But as in, the problem being is in Ennis has to grow to survive into the future, you know, and then there afterwards, that then the likes of all of the smaller villages and towns in the county have to grow similarly, you know, and I don't think if it's planned properly and sustained properly, I don't see that you'd lose the benefits of living in the likes of Ennis, because I never envisage where we're going to have traffic jams of an hour if we plan it and do it right.
Might be an hour, but you know.
Do you know, there's a point there in that, because I remember going back 30 years ago when I started off first as a much younger guy in the business, to get supplies over in Lahinch, you'd be either travelling to Galway or travelling to Limerick. You'd be doing that on maybe 3 or 4 or 5 days a week, fish or whatever you were looking for. And now, I honestly can say, I don't have to go beyond Ennis for all the supplies. So the supply chain is getting better. And Ennis needs a grand master plan. It has needed it for 20 years. And it's time it was put together. And it needs something really holistic.
Your story of that person who was working in Cork reminded me of something we covered on the news in December. This is a lot of numbers coming up. From 2011 to 2016, one census to the next, there was a bigger growth in the number of additional people from Clare working in Limerick than working in Clare. And you're on about that person who was travelling from Lahinch to Cork. That person is one of 79 people from Clare travelling to Cork City for work. There are people travelling to Fermanagh, Tyrone, Down, Monaghan, actually you name it, literally every single county in the country. I mean, it's sad, it's incredible, but and there is a big difference in the figures now than in a number of years ago. Does that make you concerned then for the likes of Curraghfinn, Martin, and villages like it, where the scene that you described is the case right across the county?
Embrace technology. Use technology to your advantage. I've been watching in Curraghfinn for the last 3 or 4 months, the lads laying down fibre optic cables. And I stopped them there Christmas week. It was loud outside about my gate. And I says, listen, that's not a fibre optic cable. And he says, yeah. And I says, will it be able to link it into the house? He says, yeah, the lads coming along about 3 months are going to put fibre optic into your house. And I'm going, wow. Fantastic. My son is actually now at home working for a London-based IT technology firm. He goes to London 3 days a week. The other 20 days a week when he's working, he spends at home. So that's fantastic. And that's the future, right? He's embracing everything that's good in terms of digital technology. But he can do it from a remote environment in the middle of the burn and have the same, well, his speed at the moment is about 13 megs, but when he gets it back up to a normal, he can live his life in a rural environment and get settled in and hopefully stay there, right?
Do you need companies to buy into that more, or are you confident they'll see the benefits of that?
It's that you, goes back to one of my key points, the government has got to turn around and actually positively discriminate towards rural environments. Put the money in, spend it to allow people to actually live a life in a sustainable way where the balance is correct, not stuck in an urban or suburban remit within 50 miles or 50 kilometres of Dublin or Cork. That's key, and the government have got to do it, and I still wait to see them actually going and doing what they say they're going to do. You know?
You're taking the words out of my mouth. I was going to say, do you have any confidence that'll happen? I mean, the experience is that, to be kind, we've been very slow to do that.
Well, the other way is to actually do it from the ground up. You know, and I think that a lot of the increases in productivity and increased employment in this area has become small people, small businesses starting up on their own without any outside help whatsoever, taking a risk and actually going and doing something for themselves. And ground up is a way that works. And then you put the pressure on the politicians to actually change the way the system works.
I still don't know, though, if you're in an office situation, how keen you're going to be to have certain workers not around for 2 or 3 days a week. To be honest,
it's people working from home is the new future. And I mean, look, the Rural Development Plan for Clare has embraced that. They're getting the shared office space back in Kilrush. They're getting shared office space in Scariff. They're getting shared office space in Ennis Diamond. They're looking at it in Ennis.
But forgetting all of that, are you going to be happy for your staff to work from home for a couple of days a week? Are you not going to be concerned that this part of, and I don't want to individualise this, but this part of their day-to-day duties they can only do if they're set at their desk here this
No, office. Because like, for example, like, okay, in our firm we've put in a huge investment into technology in the last 6 months. I expect that any of my key staff, solicitors especially, would be able to work from home. They'll be able to access the files. Everything is digitally available to them. They'll be able to access the files. They'll be able to do the work that's necessary. For consultations and meeting clients, absolutely, they'll have to be in the office. But from the point of view of scheduling actual work that has to be done, I don't see why somebody can't do it if they have appropriate space. Like, one of the problems is obviously the majority of houses aren't set up for somebody to be working at home.
Yes.
You know, and can somebody mentally separate themselves from their living room to their workspace? And that's a whole different debate. And that's why, look, shared workspaces, the availability of office space, of flexible office space, is key. And I mean, one of the big things with, I suppose, shared office space nowadays is that companies aren't investing in R&D anymore. It's far more tax efficient for them to go out and acquire a startup. And that's why these new startup hubs and why these shared office spaces have become so popular in the larger cities. And I suppose it's incumbent on us all to put a big push on that we have those facilities available in Clare for people who want to start up their small businesses, that they want to share the experiences with others, that there's spaces they can go to.
Still feels like it could be further away than maybe it should be, Michael. I'll give you the final word.
Well, thankfully, our business can't be outsourced and
you can't cook a breakfast.
And you know what? The other thing about it is the community of work is something that we will value and we should value. And that's, you know, meeting colleagues, getting away from the home environment. I mean, there's a lot of guys that enjoy that still.
Okay, you can let us know your thoughts at home. We'll be back with more from the three fellas in a minute.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964, or email focus@clare.fm.
You're welcome back. Our Friday panel are still with us in studio, William Carr, Martin Waldron and Michael Vaughan. Martin Waldron, I'll stay with yourself. Would you vote for President Oprah Winfrey? Or would you make her president?
Can we have 1 week where we don't bring that second lunatic into it? I'm not talking about poor old Oprah Winfrey, I'm talking about Mr. Trump. I honestly believe that reaction to Donald Trump is going to be an extreme again. And I think that someone the likes of Oprah Winfrey, who embraces all these PC things in this modern world, is a likely candidate to come forward for president. I fear for American politics that it's been shaken so much that a normal politician will never get elected in America in the near future.
I don't disagree with you, but surely the party system will fix that.
The party system is fundamentally broken in the States, and anyone who would argue any different is not reading what's happening at the moment.
And clutching at straws. That's how I feel when I say that.
Yeah, but look, it is Obama. I still argue very strongly that Donald Trump is a reaction of America to electing a black American as president. I mean, he is the polar opposite of everything that Obama actually stood for and still stands for. He's a year in, and it's causing chaos. But he has every single thing he said he would do, he has done.
Yeah, actually.
And he's the only president in history who has actually followed through in his manifesto.
Well, then is that... and I'm not going to blame him one individual, but if Barack Obama had done all he had was expected to do, would the voters in November 2016 have been more inclined to have embraced somebody like him?
Barack Obama was prevented from doing everything he wanted to do by the Republican and the state system. So there was a system that broke him and broke all his promises.
Trump, he still got in his healthcare change in particular. That's, you know,
but sorry, which the system at the moment are trying to completely, totally unravel. To go back on the point, I do think that it'll be some public figure that's going to come out and stand against Mr. Trump if he's not impeached between now and 2020, which is pretty
still,
likely.
Still up there as a possibility. I do agree with Martin's sentiments, Michael, in terms of, you know, do we have to talk about Donald Trump every week? I try to avoid
it. Yeah, they said you want to be mad to go into politics. That's what they say. But and I now I see the Americans are talking about bringing in a pre-nomination mental health check. The Stable Genius Act. Yes.
Yeah, not a
But I was reading back here. Oprah Winfrey. She was when she was first selected for media. They could see her talent immediately, and they said, "Don't change a thing. You have this ability." And she has this galvanizing ability and be able to get the masses, particularly, I suppose, the African-American voters and the white voters, the whole lot together. But would she have the stamina? I see she's getting support today from others in the media. And, you know, go back to Ronald Reagan, sure, you know.
But did he not do, like, 20 years in politics? Like, he didn't go from a supporting actor in a Western to the White House.
Yeah, the only thing I feel about it is that, you know, I think, you know, putting people into power like that who have tremendous idealism but don't have the nous, the political nous, I think it's going to end in failure, isn't it?
Mm. But then why does that argument... Not, it didn't resonate in 2016. I'm not going to say it won't resonate going forward.
No, but of course, people, it was a complete, Martin's right, complete reaction to the previous administration. But I still don't get the sense that Americans, by and large, can understand what they're doing, do you know?
Do you get, I'm always reluctant to ask you to talk about your customers, but do they talk much about Trump when they're over here?
You see, look, my customers wouldn't be a good benchmark for what we're talking about today, because my customers, by and large, are Republicans who have money behind them, and they want the status quo, and they want the conservatism that Trump is offering.
So they want the tax cuts of a couple of weeks ago, for example.
Sorry, I'd argue that his customers are a good benchmark for the part of America that voted for Donald Trump.
But it was quite entitled. Yes,
right?
That's what I'm saying.
And they want to preserve the status quo. So they are a good benchmark of the part of the Trump audience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, that's what I'm saying. But they wouldn't be a good benchmark as to whether the Americans have changed their position or would have learned from the exercise.
Mm.
You get a lot of differing voices, but the system they have could throw up anything, you see.
But I suppose it says something that they haven't demurred from him.
Well, they certainly haven't. No, they certainly haven't. But they haven't gone to the core and said, what can we do to make this right next time? You don't hear those conversations going on.
William?
Yeah, look, I don't like the idea of celebrity candidates in politics, because generally speaking, I think they're one or two issues, you know, and they don't have the broad depth of experience. And I think, politicians always do themselves a disfavour that there is such thing as politics as a profession. And there are some excellent people at it, and maybe the problem being they don't always get to the top to get their point across.
We don't elect them there. You could, you know.
Yeah, no. Well, it's not just Ireland. I think it's worldwide. You know that, and I think the idea being that, look, if people are going into a representative role, I think they sort of need to understand the entirety of the role, and I think maybe Donald Trump might highlight where some of the deficiencies arise, that if somebody goes straight to the top without quite understanding the layers beneath it.
Yeah, but I
like
know...
Like, for every action, there's a reaction.
No, and I get that. I'll bring Martin in after I ask you this. Can you not see a situation where if Oprah Winfrey or whoever, I mean, the wrestler, The Rock, has been talked about running... Yeah. I'm not even going to try and remember all of them. But Can you not see a situation when that argument is going to be made in 2019 and 2020 and candidate Oprah Winfrey turns around and say, yes, but they are failings of Donald Trump, I won't make the same mistakes? I mean, what you're pointing to there can very easily be put onto him as opposed to the system.
Yeah, I think as Michael said, I mean, it indicates, look, the American system is broke. I mean, we know that at the moment for anybody to consider running for president, they'd want to be talking in the billion euros plus range of the money that they're going to need to raise. Now, if you're talking about an entry fee of that size, well, then automatically it's broke because it's not available to everybody. So the original way that democracy was set up has been somewhat altered by money.
Sorry, Martin.
Yeah, look, we're not immune from it either. You go back to the last presidential campaign, we were one brown envelope away from a celebrity TV candidate becoming president. Sean Gallagher.
Yeah, but I suppose the difference.
But it just that's not the president in Ireland. Is not president in America. But it was a celebrity TV person who moved through the mix.
But it's not even a president of Ireland has a different role. A different function. So when we're having a debate, we're sort of looking at somebody that can emulate the country. As a head of state, as opposed to somebody who's making
one thing we don't have. One thing we don't have, Gavin, is we don't have that almost absolute power of patronage that's behind the American system. It starts. I mean, you talk about the families at the Bilderbergs and the people with the real money. That can put George Soros. That can put billions behind someone and behind campaigns that they decide to champion. That doesn't particularly happen over here. At least we don't see its effects as much.
There's a Mercer family referred to in Michael Voss' book.
Exactly there.
And I mean, $5 million they gave to Trump, and they weren't even overly enamoured with him, if you believe what's in the book.
No, of course, the other side of the globe, you look at what's going on over in Russia, and my God, do you want that either, you know?
The Russians are quite happy with what they have at the moment. He's the most popular president in the world, so, you know.
Is he not counting the votes, though, in that particular poll?
But you go out there. I've got some experience of that environment in the world, and they're genuinely very happy with what Mr. Putin gives them.
I agree with you. I was over in Siberia a couple of times, and they said, "Look, Russia needs a strong arm to govern it, and this is the kind of guy we actually need." But I mean, could you agree with it from our point of view?
Probably not. No. Let us know your thoughts at home. We'll be back more in a couple of minutes.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964, or email focus@clare.fm.
Our Friday panel still with us in studio, Martin Waldron, Michael Vaughan and William Carr. William, burglary rates are down according to the Gardaí. Do you see that reflected on the ground? Are you feeling safer? The over 20% drop according to what they released yesterday.
Yeah, no, I do. I do think there's been a change on the ground. I do think it's better. My biggest problem is that I don't like statistics, because I suppose knowing the court system, knowing that whether it's from arrest, whether it's from charge, whether it's from complaint, exactly what statistics are we getting, where they're coming from, and I think...
You can
cherry-pick them. And I think driving crime on the basis of statistics isn't a good model, and maybe we need to find a different model. But look, I do believe, certainly in Clare, I think the Gardaí have done a very good job. I think the recent Tiermaclan incident shows that they're on the ball, they're on top of what's happening, they're out and about, the detectives are on the ground, and so certainly from a local point of view, I think we're doing a good job. Certainly in Ennis, there certainly seems to have been a decline, and I haven't heard anything recently from the motorways. So
we can't say anymore, obviously, for that one's going through the courts, but as you say, it shows a significant Gardaí operation and pre-planning and intelligence obviously demonstrated in some of their investigations on that one. Martin, in rural Clare, in Corfin, are the same feelings of safety there?
Community alert. We set up a system in Corfin about 4 years ago.
Is this the tech system?
Tech system, right. But it also joined people together. You have signage up there. And I will argue very strongly, and William can confirm this or not, the vast majority of crime in this country is committed by a small percentage of the population.
Yeah.
And I commend the guards highly on what they've done over the last few months in terms of targeting these criminal groups or gangs. Now, we see that, again, talking about... These guys mainly live in urban environments, and they're using the upgraded road system to be able to pop in and pop out and target families. But they are targeting. They're not just... They're doing all the pre-research and everything else. If there's a community alert system, if the guards are on the ball, these guys can be kept out of your area. I think what they're doing in terms of targeting them and actually putting pressure on them is working. So fair play.
Does that replace the Bobby and the Beat, the Garda on the ground in each village?
That's a different issue. The Garda on the ground is no longer visible in each village. And I think community guards is very important to actually maintain the quality of rural life. So again, positive discrimination. Do not look at the economics of this.
But we talked earlier about technology replacing kind of work practices or changing work practices. The community text alert is, it's not replacing the Garda on the ground. But it's doing some of that function.
It is doing some of that function. But I see, again, to go back to personal experience, 2, 3, 4 years ago, you would see the local guard on the beat in Corrifin at least 1, 2 days a week. I have not seen a community guard in Corrifin over an extended period of time. Now, maybe because I'm not there during the day, but
sure, yeah.
Anecdotal evidence would say that they don't have the time anymore. They're being pulled back to local base. They're all car-based. They are getting around, but visibility on the streets is important as well.
Absolutely.
Because every community has its own issues and you need to have a visible guard of presence to subdue that as well.
How would you assess the situation in Hinch?
Well, I just instances with a conversation I had with a man who was a warehouse south of me, and his alarm on the premises was linked in, and he got a call from the Garda, say, listen, your alarm's going off, we better do something about it. And they said to him, look, we're above we've only one squad covering between Ballyvaughan and his area, which was much further south than me. And he said, we're never going to get there in time. Would you just look after yourself? And you see, that's not going to help. No, I know we're all responsible for our own premises, and if there's an alarm going off more than times than not, it's a false alarm.
Of course,
but
yeah.
Still, you know, I rang during the summer for a particular need, and I ended up getting Kilrush Garda station because Ennis Diamond wasn't available middle of the night.
Well, it closes for large portions
of
the day.
And they told
me
in Kilrush that there was only one squad car travelling between Kilrush and Ballyvaughan, and my problem wouldn't be sorted.
And that's, I don't know how serious the problem is, I'm not asking you that,
it was a social order problem, nothing huge. But, you know, we're tackling things in terms of, I suppose, if you want to call them artificial intelligence, they're probably using that a lot to kind of hone in on getting particular gangs or particular patterns. Mm. Great work. But on the ground, for confidence in villages, for confidence in living in rural places, it's not there.
But do you not think, just finally, that, I mean, there's only so much cash to go around? There's got to be a priority.
I don't know what's so much cash going around. Look, the government only saved 3 million. I mean, I'm not saying only saved 3 million, but they only saved 3 million selling off all those Garda stations and closing them down. Look, we have to rethink all that strategy.
18,500 for the station in Labuschagne was what was fetched in that one. Before we let our panellists go, I'll go back to yourself, Martin. We talked about rude behaviour on the roads, rude drivers, and a lot of people getting in touch with me this week about people refusing to put their lights on in bad visibility or wearing dark clothes in bad visibility. And I saw one gentleman walk out in front of me very close to a set of traffic lights. Actually, the traffic lights at the Tulla Road last night, where you can press the button and cross safely. He crossed anyway without doing it, wearing very dark clothes, and was glad that I had the 10 yards. If I was 10 yards closer to him, I wouldn't have liked to think what would have happened. So I've seen that myself this week. That's pedestrians, but what are your own... I think we need to improve our behaviour on the roads, basically.
Self-awareness is key. It is key. And also the road rage in a rural environment is very different to road rage in an urban environment, you know. You get stuck beside some... We're joking that the one of our candidates here, he just arrived on time. And I said he was probably stuck behind some pensioner, 85 years of age, driving a Nissan Micra on the way into town, nice and slow, you know. And that's it, right? Just live with it, right? Take the extra 30 seconds, right? Don't tailgate people, right? And if someone is behaving badly, just pull in off the road and just tip your lights and let them know that they're doing something that's not great, you know. But don't engage with people who are driving aggressively. These are people who are, they are not happy in their own lives, you know. That's the way I look at it anyway. But if you are out walking, please wear high vis, you know.
Very karma, good energy and positive energy. I'm not quite sure I'm that calm behind the wheel, Michael.
Well, I can never admit to being the perfect driver, and God knows I remember causing angst to a motorcyclist. I didn't realise it at the time, but he went ballistic beside me in going down the canal in Dublin, and I couldn't see what I'd done. But I mean, obviously I'd missed him in the mirror or somewhere like that. But I never saw a rage as bad as it. I mean, he was thumping his helmet against my window, and I was thinking, my God, what'll I do here? So I just tried to remain calm and not aggravate the person more, and that's as much as you can do. Yeah. And as my grandmother used to always, or my grandaunt used to always say, try and say a prayer for them.
I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, I'm not saying whatever you did, him kind of saying, you know, making you aware of it, but there's a line. You know, there's a limit. There's manners and courtesy.
I find if you're making a mistake in Dublin, just point CE registration, you know, and you kind of go, oh, Jesus, culture, you know.
Sorry, I'll give you the file. Are we desperately bad? Is it overblown, William?
Look, we're not great, and I think a lot of people just need to take that extra 5 or 10 seconds, you know, especially in Ennis, for example. A lot of the parking spots on the streets, people need to reverse park into them. You know, not everybody is as experienced as other drivers, so do you know what? Just give them a few minutes, let them pull in, let them pull out. At the end of the day, if you let people pull in now to parking spots without getting angry over it, everybody gets in and out a lot quicker. It just helps everything.
The survey that sparked our discussion on this, and I'll finish with this during the week, was that. If you're in a bigger car, the bigger the car, the bigger the you know what inside of it.
Was a BMW, I believe, was the culprit.
Yes, yes.
I don't drive one of them now. Thank
Gentlemen, one and all, we will leave it there, and thank you very much, Michael Vaughan, William Cahir, and Martin Walden. Enjoyed it very much. We'll have another Friday panel next week, and some of our last young scientists. We're back in a couple of minutes' time.
Morning Focus, in association with Shannon Airport. Fly Shannon and pack more into your day with up to 38 departures each week to London. Explore more today on shannonairport.ie.